Hey, it's Beth here. Over 65 and Talking, episode 528. I don't know if AI was right about this new program where I just come in once a week, but anyway, I'm still on it. So, I've got the review of the movie. This week was you can take your Sunday school teacher to this movie. It's called Arthur the King. It's based on a true story. Mark Wahlberg is in it. It's a true story about this Swedish adventurer who was on a 500-mile trek, crazy guy, through Ecuador. And this dog that's all beat up and has a bad cut and, like, it's got bugs in it and everything. Not disgusting. But what is wrong with this movie is the people that it's based on are alive and they're Swedish. And they were on the movie set. So this is the most earnest, unfun movie you'll ever see. It's so dogmatic, if that could be true, but it's not. It's good though. It's just, nothing happens. It's just, you could tell the story in 2 minutes because the people who made it were on the set. So they're so perfect. Everything's amazing. She's never yelling at her husband. The kid is never spilling milk. Nothing bad happens during the whole movie. There's a little poop, you know, problem for 500-mile trek. This guy picks up a dog. They all agree to not win the race because of this dog. I mean, it should have been. I'm just telling you, I could smell it. There was more trouble than this movie portrayed. But if you have a grandmother or 5-year-old, a 12-year-old that's hungry and it's a movie theater with hamburgers, take them. It's what life should be like. Completely perfect people doing completely perfect things. So, anyway, definitely a Netflix. Don't go to the movies unless your grandchildren are coming in. You don't know what to do. Not a dirty word in it. Not a bad thought. So it was, I guess, amazing in that way. It was like an afternoon special, actually. And those are good. But, you know, Mark Wahlberg can do a lot more than that. So, anyway, very sweet movie. I'm sure he made it so his children could watch it. And I think his children are too old now. He should have made it years ago. Okay, so now, go on to Newshound. But definitely rent it, but don't watch it without a kid. Don't subject yourself to it for no good reason. A good reason will be that it would be uplifting for young people. Okay? That's it. All right. So this was weird. Style and fashion in the Wall Street Journal on Saturday. Okay. They call this sandwich dressing. I mean, do I want that? So what happens is you have like a yellow shirt and yellow shoes. Michelle Yeoh is wearing that in the center picture. And then another color in the middle. Who came up with this? Red shirt, red shoes, white shirt, white shoes. And then something in the middle. Are these people desperate? It doesn't look good. I mean, if you didn't tell me it was sandwich dressing, I wouldn't even know anything was going on. Who cares? Okay. Now, underneath, there's something that's pretty funny. Do the rich smell different? So there are now expensive deodorants on the market. Donna Karan has one for $32 called Cashmere Mist. Mist. I don't think I want the word mist attached to my armpits. Not a good word. Not a good feel. Not what I'm looking for. Maybe arid desert is what I'm looking for. And then there's a Chanel number 5 deodorant that is $65. Whoa! Do I want my armpits smelling like Chanel number 5? I kind of want it smelling like nothing, to tell you the truth. But those are the choices. Okay, so the rich want to smell different and they want to smell better. So they're spending all this money on themselves. And Hermes has one called, oh my gosh, Eau d'Orange. And that's $49. I do not one, my armpit smelling like an orange. I'm positive that is not where I want $49 to go. Okay, so that's one. So the rich want to smell different under their armpits. Go for it. Have it. Okay, so then there's a play coming out about The Notebook, which was that huge book, huge movie. And she acts like she came out of nowhere, but her parents were in the biz. She started dating this guy named Will Chase, who was a big actor on Broadway. And she made a couple of commercials before that and a couple of videos, the music for. So she's got this big job and it's fulfilling her dream, okay? Oh my God, she's a kid. She's a little tiny kid and she's fulfilling her dream. Her lifelong dream, she calls it. She's 12 years old. 12 years old. Her name is Ingrid Mickelson. Oh my God. She's been working on Broadway since she was 9 years old. So I guess she looks maybe 39, so that does make a difference, I guess. But I haven't fulfilled my lifelong dream, and I'm 70. Wow, what's she going to do with the rest of her life? Get a new lifelong dream. Believe me, it's anticlimactic if you reach your lifelong dream at 39. This is all she ever wanted to do, and she's done it. And now she doesn't know what to do next. I don't know. Okay, I'm not a baseball fan, but there's this really nice story about this mentor who, this little guy came in from down below, like the little leagues, the B leagues, whatever they call them, and the road guys. Okay, so there's the big baseball team. I'm such a fan, and I'm so good at this. Then there's another team that's like, plays in little towns like, you know, Dimebox, Texas, okay? This pitcher, Gooden, this kid comes up. He's fantastic, but they're sending him down to the little leagues or whatever they call it. He gives him tips, keeps him there, and he tells the guy, you're going to take my job. I'm going to train you and coach you so beautifully that you're going to take my job from me this year. The guy was 39. The kid did everything the coach, 39-year-old pitcher, told him to do. And he took his job. 40 years later, they're both being brought into the Hall of Fame together. The kid wouldn't go without him. I mean, it's a romantic story. Dwight Gooden, he was the 20-year-old player. Okay, so Mike Torres is the guy that taught this kid how to steal his position on the mound. What a sweet guy. They stayed friends for life. They talk every single day for 40 more years. So, you know, if I ever do a good deed, I want that kind of respect. I want someone to love me for the rest of my life and call me up every single day. That's what I want. That's what I expect. And that kid did it. That Gooden kid called up Mike Torres every single day for the rest of his life. And then they go and they win an award together. That's, if you do something noble and honest and good, you deserve a lifelong fan. I think there's like Room with a View. Two people saw somebody die and they were friends for the rest of their lives. Yeah, I want to make a connection like that. I think more people would do good things if people would never forget. Or the worst thing, act like it never happened. That Gooden guy never said, hey, I figured it out myself. Constantly gave that Torres guy credit. Love it. Love it. That's what I'm looking for. Devotion. Okay, so here's one. Sydell Miller died. She invented Duralash with her husband, and they had the biggest house in Florida, sold it for millions of dollars. Okay, but here's the part of the story that I love. Okay, she worked for her husband for a day. She didn't like it as a secretary, so she started coming up with great ideas for a company that they could build together. They were both hairdressers. She's a genius. Okay, so she wants to make eyelashes fake eyelashes. Her husband's like, okay. So they do it. And he's not really in. Not really totally set about it. So what happened is he wouldn't buy a ton of product for the convention that she wanted to go to. He was on the fence, right? So the first day, they are at this convention, and all the people that work there, 100 people, she put 100 eyelashes on all the wait staff and all the women that were standing in front of cars and everything, and they didn't sell one product, not one. Her husband's real upset, right? So she takes him out to dinner to buy him a steak, make him happy. And they bought 2 days. It was a 2-day convention. She's like, come on, honey, please, let's go tomorrow. He's like, I can't take it. It's the saddest thing ever. And I'm embarrassed. And there are people that I work with watching me sit in this booth with you with these fake eyelashes that no one's buying and no lines in front of us, except for giving it away. They're laughing at me. They're laughing at me. Said, hell, I can't go back. Begs him. Gets him a shrimp cocktail and a steak and a chocolate pie. He craters. They go back the next day. They found a line of 60 women waiting for them. Nobody believed that the eyelashes would stay put. Word got out. They sold out in 15 minutes. Other women who had the eyelashes on helped them sell the other 300 boxes in 15 minutes, started them on their Duralash, which made them a fortune. And finally, as her husband was dying, he finally said, you know what? That was a good idea. On her deathbed, that's what she was saying. I'm coming up there. I want to hear it one more time. It was a good idea. Cute. Okay. There's a treasure hunter that found a Viking sword. I love this story because he gave it to the museum, and he was on private property that the country of England owns, that the Queen owned. And they just took the sword from him. And all he's asking for is that he gets to go back on the private property. This guy has class. His name is Trevor Penny, and he didn't make a penny from it. Not one penny. It's called... So what they do in England is the Vikings, when they were in England, would pray to the Viking gods and throw swords into rivers and lakes, giving it to the gods so that they would beat, bludgeon, and kill all the English. So there are swords and money and other things that Vikings threw into the water. He has this huge magnet on the end of a fishing pole, and that's how he gets this stuff. And the Queen didn't even say thank you. Not a word. Well, I know she's dead. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Of course she couldn't say thank you. That's fine. Okay. Now, this was the cutest wedding. Okay. Grandmother's patience with couple is rewarded. Beautiful couple, two little girls. And this grandmother, they don't get married. She has one baby with a guy. They don't get married. He kind of goes off, does his own thing. She goes and visits her grandmother, whining about it all the time, and she's more beautiful than he is. Finally, the guy gets in touch with her. His name is Drew. I forgive him because he got better. And he's like, hey, baby, I think we should have another baby. She goes to her grandmother's house, and her grandmother's like, are you out of your mind? She's like, no, I love him. Her name's Melanie. I love him. I love him. She has another baby with this guy. Still no ring. Still no nothing. So the grandmother starts tormenting Drew and making Drew look in the mirror and saying things like, you need to be an example for your children. And he says, we're non-traditional. And she says to him, get traditional now. She backs this guy into a corner. He finally proposes, and he's the happiest guy who ever was. Couple's daughters are at the wedding. Everybody's at the wedding. He thanked the grandmother a million times. She's 100 years old. It was like, do this or die. She was on his case, making him get the EBGBs about it. Do this before I die. You have to do this. So anyway, he did. They're happy. He's deliriously happy. He really wanted to do it. He really wanted to do it. My mother-in-law did that to my brother-in-law. Lived with a girl for 12 years. They were so happy. She wanted to get married. He didn't. On her deathbed, she told me to tell him, I'm leaving everything to your father, to my husband, except for my wedding ring. And I want you to tell my son, you better damn well use it. 3 months later, they're married, deliriously happy, just like this Trevor guy. Just pull the trigger. It's exhausting for everyone, including yourself. Just pull the trigger. Get married. You'll feel better once it's over. It's just like being nauseous. Just throw up. Watch your dog. Learn from your dog. Just get it over with. Everyone will be happy, including yourself. If I ever had to give that speech to someone, I would clean it up. Okay, there's this woman named Phoebe Philo. She was a former Chloe and Celine designer. She went out on her own, and all of her pieces of clothing are so expensive. Like, I mean, everything is $5,000. Her coats are $25,000, and she's got a terrible return policy. So now she has to do, she stayed in hiding until now. She has to come out, and she has to talk to people. She has to show up. And this is how she designs clothes. This is what she wants to do. She wants everything to not be sexually attractive. She wants the look to not be what a man would gaze upon. This is what she wants. She's designing clothes that a woman can feel comfortable in, relaxed in, and go anywhere in without suffering the gaze of a man's eye. Oh my God. She doesn't want to be sexualized. She doesn't want any of it. So these clothes look like shopping bags. All of them. And they're tight. It's like you have to be skinny. Why are you skinny if you don't want men to look at you? She has nothing to do with any beauty of any kind. She says that her daughter has a couple of her pieces and she's really sweet, but she's like, oh mom, I can't wear that. I'm not going to look like that. Her daughter's right. She's wrong. And everything she has is so expensive. She said she's really sorry about the return policy, but she's not sorry about the prices. If you want to look, if you don't want a man to gaze upon you, you need to spend $25,000 on a coat, $10,000 on a pair of pants. And she says you can wear them forever. No one's ever going to, you know, you're not going to ever throw them off and jump in bed. You're going to hang them up in the closet all by yourself, quietly, perfectly. Your whole life is going to be a constant steady stream of nothing happening if you buy Phoebe Philo clothes. So that's appealing to no one. Not even her daughter. Okay, so then here's this thing that happened at the Oscars. Lots of things happened at the Oscars, so I'm told. I watched the Oscars. I didn't see it. But I did notice these ornamental pins that men were wearing. Some were red, but those had meaning. The other ones were like, and they said, the pins swiftly spread beyond the grandmother's realm. They kind of did look like your grandmother's, but they're writing this article as if it's me, 70-year-old grandmother. No, you should say great-great-grandmothers for people who are 30, because I'm not wearing these brooches. I'm not wearing brooches that look like chameleons and butterflies and caterpillars and geckos. But it says grandmothers. Why do we always have to be thrown off the bus for no reason? We haven't done anything. I don't get it, and I don't like it. Okay, now this is about eyebrows. And my eyebrows are disgusting. And they look like Captain Benny's seafood restaurant eyebrows. The Gork and Fisherman eyebrows. So most of them are okay. But some of them, like the white ones, are standing straight up. and they are as thick as a telephone wire. I mean, seriously, when I pluck them, the back of my head aches. So I have been plucking them, but now they're not coming back. So there's bald spots. So I had to get this product, and oh my gosh, what's the name of it? Okay, I learned how to pronounce it. Clé de Peau. Okay, I was in Neiman's. I had a wonderful time on Monday, all by myself. My shingles in my eyeball is mostly gone. Kept my sunglasses on. Looked very, you know, Jackie O. And went to the makeup department. Clé de Peau. So I have this mascara sort of thing that I put on my eyebrows now to fill in the blanks and cover up the white ones because I can't get rid of them anymore. Now I have to make friends with my white eyebrows. Okay? So this eyebrow woman, she just plucks eyebrows. She says while teasing can weaken the hair. Okay, watch it when you're teasing. Oh, this is why I'm here. This is it. She says the real villain is your skincare routine. Can you imagine putting all your skin products into your scalp? Now that's interesting. She wants you to keep everything, all your creams, everything off your eyebrows because you're suffocating them. That is very interesting. I never knew that, and I totally believe it. She says that your eyebrows should be the same on both sides and it'll make your eyes look bigger. So, of course, I can't do that because both sides of my face are very different. I sleep on one and it's up higher than the other side. I mean, that's just happened in the last year. But if you haven't done anything like that, you can just make your eyebrows as even as you can. She wants you to leave the center alone. And she says, take a bit off the top, which I heard a long time ago was a very bad idea, and a little off the bottom and see what you've got in the middle. And don't put your moisturizer, any of that stuff, near your eyebrows. Brilliant. And actually, she doesn't even like eyebrow pencil. She prefers like a mascara thing. That's why I got Clé de Peau. I can't believe it. I didn't even know what I was buying till I left the store and I saw Clé de Peau. CELDEPEAU. And it means like beautiful face and beautiful skin in French, because I'm very French. I mean, I speak French in my obituaries. I'm a ballerina and things I'm just adding as I go along. But something that will never change will be that I speak exquisite French, because my French teacher also taught me how to sing. So I speak like bonjour, you know, but it's not like that in my obituary. It's beautiful in my obituary because my obituary is fiction. So oh, I read this big article about miscarriages. Oh my God. I went through infertility. This took me back post-traumatic stress syndrome. These poor girls, but they find out that they're pregnant at 5 weeks, 6 weeks. They have more miscarriages than anybody, over and over and over. And of course, I thought that everything was working out and everybody was doing great. But no, there's of course a group of women that are suffering. All of the helps, all the advantages just get them pregnant. And then they lose the babies. Oh my gosh, and this poor girl, she can see one of her pregnancies got to 3 months. I mean, that's back in the day. That's almost when you found out you were pregnant. I mean, we didn't have EPT. Of course, it was 50 years ago. But we didn't suffer. We didn't suffer as much as these girls do now. And they suffer in silence. And it's like in America, we don't want to talk about a girl who had a miscarriage at 7 weeks. But they feel it. They feel it as if it was a 4-month miscarriage. And I get it. I totally understand it. So these girls are suffering in silence and people are thinking they're actually crazy, and they are not. They are not. So she's lost these babies. One she got to 3 months and she can almost see him playing in the playground. Oh my God. I just think, my God, you could have 3 miscarriages a month if you knew that you were pregnant at 6 weeks. I mean, a lot of crazy things happen before 2 months. And these girls are suffering in silence because people think they're crazy. I do not. I'm very sorry for them. If you ever hear a story like that, just know it's real. I mean, even though it sounds nutty, like, how did you even know you were pregnant at 6 weeks? They know. So, sadder than sad. Okay, so here's a little story. It's so cute. All night, you like, this is a tiny love story called Hold Me. All night, you turn like rotisserie in our bed. Awake as usual, I wait for you to rotate on your back, then slide onto your chest and say, hold me. These people have to be in their 70s. Because my dad died, my mom is old, our son might have COVID, I've had a weird dream, it's an election year, climate change scares me, I think I'm killing the bugs and the beetles and all the bees. I think it's all my fault. I think I'm the reason the bees are dying. The world is in bedlam, and there are things I have to do tomorrow. This is so cute. That's exactly what it feels like at 4 a.m. Just like somebody asked F. Scott Fitzgerald about his wife, Zelda, who was a ballerina, by the way. Not good, but a ballerina. They said, somebody told me that Zelda's not okay. And F. Scott said, for Zelda, every hour is 4 a.m. That's how unokay she was. Well, this woman at 4 a.m., she just holds her husband and she feels comforted. Kit and I hold hands in bed and I feel comforted. It's just nice to know that somebody's there and that we're in it together. Okay, so now this is very strange, I think. Soho House is in Portland. This is like this incredible, lush, clubby thing that they do in London, and they've decided to go to Portland, which is supposed to be weird and funky and fun. And I'm thinking, Soho House is not making a mistake. Portland is not what we think it is. And it's not. It's filled with rich, rich people who want a club and be part of a very funkified, very upscale coolness. And Soho House wants to be there, and they have sold out their memberships immediately, and people are like, really? Well, that's odd. And I'm thinking, no, Soho House does not make a mistake. Okay, so my snapshot also got started from being in the paper. Oh my gosh. Okay, so like the other thing Kit and I do, besides holding hands, is we check if somebody sleeps in the morning to make sure they're not dead. It gets kind of scary when you get older. And it really does. Okay, so this one is about, oh my gosh, this guy, his father was dying. And he had very bad cancer. And he was flailing in bed and very upset. And finally, he talked to his son. And he was fiddling with his shirt. And he was saying, come on, son, let's go fishing. Let's go to the cabin in the woods. And he felt better. And the people that were working there told him to leave the room because his father was hallucinating. And he looked it up. He got very involved. He started to get millions of views and comments on sites that he started asking people, is it hallucinations or what is it? And he found out that people do this. Towards the end of their life, things become much more clear and make much more sense. And it made me think of my father, who, towards the end of his life, right at the end, he would ask me, what would St. Peter think of this? Like I was a priest in a confessional. He was confessing his sins to me. And some of them were pretty funny. Like bar scenes. He was a 50s guy. So he would go to the bars after work, entertaining customers and sometimes with his brother-in-laws. And one night he was there and this man and this woman got into a fight. And he wanted to be a Quaker. So he goes up to this man and he goes, friend, what are you hitting her for? She's a lovely woman. And the woman clocked him. and he went out like a light. She told him to get lost. I said, you are going to get points from St. Peter for that one. That one is in the really good column. So he's like, okay, what about this one? So he tells me another story. And in this one, it's kind of complicated. He was with one of his brother-in-laws was 6'5". Steve, he was going to be a professional baseball or football player. Contracts for both in New York, Giants, Dodgers. And he went to World War II after, Pearl Harbor. And he was at the Battle of the Bulge. And he was the first on-field battle colostomy that survived. So he came home from the war, still 6'5", but not enough of a good athlete, but still very strong. And his other brother-in-law was just a regular guy. Okay, so they're at this bar, and he sees a fight again. I'm like, why do you keep doing this? Goes up to the two fellas, it was a fellow and a woman again. And he says, friend, I don't think you should be yelling at your beautiful companion like that. So the guy goes, well, maybe not. And so my father goes, yeah, maybe not. And he goes, why don't we take this outside and continue the conversation? My father looked him over. He was 5'6" and about 120 pounds. My dad thought, ooh, I can take this guy. He's like, okay, let's take it outside. He said it real loud so everybody would hear it. They go on the back. This 5'6" guy is followed by his two friends who are pretty big. My Uncle Steve follows them, cracks their two heads together like a coconut. My father just looks over. The other 5'6" guy runs like the Dickens. And my father sees these two heads go down. They left the bar immediately. Just didn't even go back in. Everybody left. These two guys, my father said they were breathing, and he just left, and he said he looked in the paper. He called the hospitals. He was sick about it. He thinks one of them got hurt because it could have had a concussion or even worse. I said, Dad, I'm not so sure about that one myself, honestly, but Uncle Steve did it. You didn't. And you felt bad about it, and you called the hospitals. And you tried. I think St. Peter's going to be pretty good about that. And it happened like 50 years ago. And you're still upset about it. I can see it in your eyes. I think St. Peter's going to see that. I think he's going to be good about it. Anyway, we did story after story like this. And he was white knuckle, scared to death. Kept visiting him. He wasn't eating. He was getting thinner and more scared about dying. So I go this one day. And he looks beatific. I've never used that word in a sentence before. He looked like there was a halo around him. Happy, smiling, peaceful. He goes, Mary Beth, come here. It's my name, Mary Beth. I don't like the name Mary because the Blessed Virgin Mother, she's too good for me. Too high. Don't deserve her name. So I dropped it. Did not earn it. So anyway, but he never stopped calling me Mary. Mary, come here. I got to tell you something. I'm like, what? You look great. He goes, I feel great. Last night, your Aunt Marion, my twin sister, she's been dead for 20 years, came to me here. She was here. She was here. It was in a vision. She was here, right here. She looked at me and she said, Maddie, don't worry. I'll do all the talking. Now, this was meaningful to him because Aunt Marion talked for him till he was 7.5 years old. She'd say, Maddie wants a cookie. Maddie wants to go out. She did all the talking. She's a master of the language. From that moment on, he relaxed. He was calm. And he was dead in 2 days, peaceful as could be. So I totally believe that you shouldn't send anyone out of the room, if they're talking and they seem to be somewhere else. I think it's grace. It's perfect. You should be there. Stay with whoever it is and say, great dad, I'll get my coat. Let's go to the camp. Let's go to the cabin. Back them up. They're going where they need to go. They're going where they can find peace. They're going where the gates will open up and St. Peter will be there and he'll be like, hi, how you doing? And just, he knew he was going to get through those doors because Aunt Marion was going to do all the talking. I couldn't believe it. So if you're ever in a place like that, it's a place of grace and you're lucky to be there. Don't let anybody kick you out of the room. It's not a delusion. It's as real as the hand in front of your face. Just go with it. Go wherever they go. Back them up. Back them up. Help them. You'll be part of their happiness. I mean, I didn't even know what I was doing. And at least I didn't do it wrong. I didn't say, she didn't come. She wasn't here. I was like, sure, sure, Dad, sure. Whatever. Totally with you. Now my pet peeve. Yesterday, I don't know what's going on. I've almost been robbed twice recently. Yesterday, I got bit by a dog twice. And it wasn't a little dog. It got my upper thigh. We were delivering meals. David and I were delivering Meals on Wheels. We go to this house. They've got two little pretty Lhasa Apsas in the front. Okay. Yep, yep, yep. Yep, yep, yep. Fine. Cute. Go to the front door. Open it up. Cujo's in there with another dog. I didn't even see the other dog. Goes right for me. I mean, I've got a mark. I was wearing like stockings or whatever you call them, whatever they, those leggings. Okay, I don't know if that helped. Got bit, start running towards the gate. Got bit again, and then he got my dress and got his tooth stuck on it as I'm going through the gate. I have never been bit by a dog before. It's not fun. It's not enjoyable. It's terrifying. It brings you, like, I think you feel like a cave dweller or something. I should have kicked the dog, but I didn't. I was a prey. I just was, ooh, that's all I did. I mean, I could have kicked him. He was bigger, but still, I just ran like a bunny rabbit, which I hate about myself. I have no backbone. I have no fight in me. I'm surprised myself and my DNA has made it through these centuries. I must have been standing behind people who protected me every single generation of my life because I have nothing in me that fights back. And I took it and I was fine. And then last night I was like, felt it. It's terrifying. If you ever hear somebody tell you that they were bit by a dog, stop and listen and pay attention. And if they have to repeat it 5 times, let them, because it's terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. I saw his teeth. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I'm just standing there and I see these teeth and it was like there's a hole in my leg. He got out of the blue. And then the worst part of the story is, this is unbelievable. We were at the wrong house. We've only done that one other time in 14 years. The poor lady. Oh, this is the worst part. It's the worst part. She looked out the window of her little door because it had glass on it. She opened it. This Cujo comes out. And then she says to me, I thought you were my son. I'm like, lady, why don't you just shoot me? You thought I was your son? What part of this looks like your son? First of all, you're only 50 or 55. How old is your son? And how could he look like me? I thought you were my son. Then she was real sorry I got bit. But I thought you were my son. She looked in my face. Oh, how much insulting can I take? Anyway, I'm going to get over it, but it's not going to be quick. That's what happens when you get bit by a dog. Okay, so my joke is Norm MacDonald because he had cancer for 10 years. Oh my gosh. He said that he was fighting really hard and he said, you know what? I'm pretty sure When I die, the cancer dies with me. That's not a loss, that's a draw. And in his last podcast video, he spent a whole lot of time talking about his mother. Her name was Fern. He was raised in Ottawa. And he just talked about how great she was. How she was the kind of mom from way back when who everybody's sitting at the table and she's up making sure everybody has what they need. Do you want more? Can I get you some more peas? Oh, I forgot the turnips. Whatever. It's Ottawa. They eat turnips. That's the kind of person she was. And he loved her so much. He said, your mother could be a saint, but not like my mother. And he goes on and on. And he was out to lunch with his friend one time. And he said he loved milk. And he has one friend who's a psychologist. Had one friend. I keep forgetting he's not here. Oh, and he was a wonderful father. He has a boy named Dylan, just one child. He married a marriage counselor, but their marriage didn't work out. Marriage therapist. Still, the marriage didn't work out. So when the marriage didn't work out, Fern in Ottawa goes, okay, Norm, you blew it. I'm moving down there into your house. Norm goes, no. He buys her house across the street. You're not going to screw up this kid, Norm. You're not going to do it. You travel. You are a comedian. You're on the road. This kid, when it's my 3.5 days, your 3.5 days, is going to get a hot meal. So she moved her life upside down. She had friends. She played bridge up there. She's a big shot. She came down, lived across the street from Norm to raise Dylan, who turned out terrific. He's a comedian. He's a lovely kid. Loves his father. Loved his father. But anyway, Fern's fantastic. So he's out with his friend, who's a psychologist. I mean, his wife, this could explain everything. His wife was a marriage therapist. It didn't work out. His friend, he can only see him like once every 3 or 4 months because something always happens. This time he's out with his psychologist buddy, and the buddy goes, Norm's drinking a glass of milk. The buddy goes, you really enjoy milk, don't you? Norm's like, oh my God, I can hear it coming. Yeah. Yeah, Bob. I really enjoy milk. He said, you know why, right? He said, no, Bob, I do not know why, and I don't want to know why. He said, it's because you miss nursing with your mother. Norm goes, no, I don't. Stop it. The glass of milk is sitting right between him, and he's not taking another sip. No, I do not want to do that with my mother. That is a disgusting thought. I can love my mother and not want to be nursing with my mother, okay? Bob, I'm not going to see you for a year because of this. So he goes, look, I'm not going to take it back. I got a lovely mother. He's talking about this in the last podcast. She's fantastic. I would have never made it without her. She saved my life. She saved my kid's life. She's always making sure everything's perfect. She's a saint. They made them like that in the 50s. And I got one. Everybody got one. Which is kind of cute. Because it's kind of true. So, anyway, this joke that is world famous. A Norm joke. He told it on Conan O'Brien. Okay, so he's like this guy that'll show up if you pay him enough at a moment's notice. Conan O'Brien was having a lot of trouble with this show that he had on a Saturday night. The big star wasn't showing up. Called up Norm an hour before the show. Norm, can you come in? Sure. Sends the car over. Picks up Norm. He's there. He looks like he rolled out of bed. Does his little bit. And then Conan goes, oh my God, the next guy, he's in the back. He's not coming out of the green room. Can you stick around for another 5 minutes? Norm had just given everything he had to the occasion. He looks at him and he goes, okay, Conan, but it's going to cost you. So he goes, okay, anything, anything. I don't know what to do with myself. Norm sits back and he decides what to do. There's a 20-second joke from this other comedian called Colin Quinn. He gave him credit for it. He said, a story I just heard, but he gave the credit to his driver in the car. So he's telling Conan, hey, you know what? You got that ride from me tonight, and I really appreciate it. And Conan's like, Conan's like, we give everyone a ride. It's like, yeah, okay. But this guy had a good story. So he's like, really? Why don't I put him on the show? And he said, I'm going to tell you the story. The story goes like this. It's a true story. Guy's driving the car up in the front. He goes, you're not going to believe this, but guess what happened? This podiatrist is just about to close down for the night. Moth comes in the room, sits down in front of him, starts talking. The moth goes, listen, doc, I got to tell you. Everything's going wrong with my life. Everything. I walk around. A guy goes, oh, your feet hurt? He goes, no, I walk around in a malaise. Constant malaise. I don't know what to think. I don't know what to do. I go to bed at night. There's a stranger in my bed where my wife used to be. He's like, your wife leave? No, she's there, but she's a stranger to me now. I don't even know her anymore. I look in her eyes. I can't find my wife. I don't know what it is, but it's my problem. I've got a problem, Doc. I've got a big one. I look at my son. I don't even love him anymore. All I see in his eyes is remorse, fear, cowardice. All the feelings I have. Doc, I'm losing it. I'm losing it. I pace. Doctor goes, so your feet really do hurt? No, it's not my feet. It's up here. It's in my heart. It's in my heart. Doc goes, oh, I'm a podiatrist. What are you doing here? And the moth goes, oh, I saw the light on. That's the joke. But the real thing is in Norm's very last podcast. He spent half of the time talking about his mother, who still lives across the street. She's still there right now without her son. Poor Fern. But he talked about her with such devotion. The 50s moms, our moms, just how they really were home all the time. And when it snowed, they really did make you chocolate milk. And you really did have clean pajamas. And they really did care that you ate your yellow vegetable. And his mom was the best of them all. Because she moved her own self down from Ottawa to live across the street from her son when he screwed everything up. She was not mad, but she was going to make Dylan turn out great. And he turned out great. He was at an award ceremony holding a puppy dog. He was taking the award for his father after his father died. He was hilarious. It was the second time this award, crazy off the award that nobody's ever heard of. He said that his father spent his whole life wanting to be the second winner of this obscure award. Loved dogs. Loved his dad. He's a cute kid, 29. He's a comedian, coming up in the world. And he loves his grandmother. Gives Fern all the credit for how he turned out. He's healthy. His bones are strong. He ate well. The Ferns of the world will be the Ferns of the world. So that's what I've got. And got bit by a dog. Oh, my shingles in my eyeball is practically gone. I would say if I scare a baby, it's for another reason. Maybe what I'm wearing. My face, almost the Phantom of the Opera look is gone. The blow up on the cheek is gone. Except for that big hockey puck underneath my eyeball, I'm a winner. I am definitely passing, and my ghosting from the hospital is over, and I got in, and now I'm just waiting for my day where I train to be a baby hugger, a baby cuddler. That's what they call me, a baby cuddler. My training is going to be so great because I'm going to be a natural and I'm going to cuddle these babies in ICU and I'm going to tell them everything's going to be fine. And I'm going to tell them their mom's going to be here in a little while. I'm going to tell them all about life. They're going to hear my voice. They're going to hear my heart and I'm going to love them. So I got my job back. No more ghosting. Thank God. Life is good. Shingles is gone. Dog bite in the rearview mirror. You know, when the dog bites, when the bee stings, probably get stung by a bee this summer. It's all going to be okay. and I will be back. Thanks.
They fly so high, nearly reach the sky, and like my dream.